everyone this holiday season. Visit nyc.gov/trucksmart.
Holidays bring us all together. So let's stay up to date with COVID-19 vaccines and boosters. And mask up if it's crowded indoors. Happy, healthy holidays.
The time now is 2 p.m. Stay tuned for Quantum Medicine with Dr. Kamal Kakai here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online.
Greetings and welcome to this edition of Quantum Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Kamal Kakai, healinghealthservices.com. And you know, on this program, I spend a lot of time in really understanding, helping people to better understand the relationship of your persona to the larger consciousness. And within that, we all have a mind and we all know how busy this mind can get. And as a practitioner, when people come to me with health problems, you know, you're not only are you trying to show them the errors in living, but you're trying to show them the errors in their way of thinking and, you know, the perspective that they have about something. You're trying to expand that or show them something from a different angle. So it's important that we understand how the mind works and how we can better utilize certain techniques that will help us from getting stuck, because it's the stuckness that leads to blocked energy that then leads to things that happen in your tissues and at the cellular level. So today I have a guest who, you know, I really come into contact with her and Sage Radar around breathing and the relationship of breath to thinking, of all of that to physiology, and how all of this works together. But fundamental to this is understanding how the mind operates and how we do things to ourselves unintentionally. So today we're going to be talking about the 7 mental laws that govern all things. And that's pretty, it's a pretty weighty thing. I think New Thought practitioner, Emmett Fox, is someone that coined that term originally, but the practice of it is something that's embodied by our guest, Megan Berg. Now, let me just say a few words about Megan before we get started. Megan was born to explore and train both breath and brain to heal the body. And there's a lot in that, but we're not going to get there directly. So over the past 2 decades, she has worked as a massage therapist in a variety of settings, including corporate healthcare, private clinic, and sport, you know, particularly in Canada. So she's a certified breath mastery practitioner, and she's been mentored by and is currently working with breath artist Sage Radar. And she really grew her online chops in 2021, leading a free weekly global breath community called Breath Church with Sage Radar. She has an embodied working knowledge of applied neurofeedback, breath work, body work, and an energetic healing that she brings to her process of sharing neuroacrobatics with the world. Well, welcome, Megan, and I am so glad that you are here today to really share this work, which when I heard really caught my attention in terms of how, you know, this work really embraces an understanding of the mind that allows you to manipulate and work with it differently. So I'm going to just give you the floor, so to speak, and let you talk about these 7 principles And perhaps we'll have an example with each one. And I think this is something that the listening audience really wants to hear and get and apply to their own lives. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's such an amazing opportunity to just have this conversation with you. So I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.
Okay.
So how did I come across these seven mental laws that govern all thought? Well, when I first started working with Sage, he began to teach me what is now neuroacrobatics, which is, as you know, it's a way to think and breathe, a different way to think and breathe. You know, breath work has traditionally included the breath, and meditation has traditionally been about the mind. And so what Sage did was kind of create a way to think and breathe. And I'm going to flip to one of our core principles at neuroacrobatics, which is that psychology becomes physiology via pulmonology. So what you think while you breathe affects your body or shows up in your body. And
I'm going to ask you to say that one more time, because that's a mouthful. And I want people to hear it again so they turn it over in their minds.
Yes, it took me a while to really understand what this meant. So psychology becomes physiology via pulmonology. So what you think while you breathe affects your body. So we know that the mind, you know, what we're thinking at any given moment is, depending on what we're thinking, is creating chemicals and hormones and all of these responses that affect our physiology. And so where we really focus in neuroacrobatics is thinking and breathing. And this is where the seven mental laws come in. So I actually wrote a 7-day challenge all about this and dove really deep. So I would love to just get into each law and sum it up in one sentence. Does that sound good?
It sounds good, as long as we can get to examples at some point so people really get it that way.
So the first mental law is the law of relaxation, which summed up can be in one sentence that mental effort defeats itself, so you might as well relax about it. And so what that means is that the more that we kind of mental effort, the slower thought gets. The interesting thing is that in the mental plane, things work a little bit differently than they do in the physical plane. In the mental plane, if I want to hammer a nail into a board, the harder I hit the nail, the more strength or power I use, the faster the nail goes into the board.
That's on the physical plane.
That's on the physical plane.
Physical plane, right.
Sorry. Yeah. Physical plane. So on the mental plane, it's kind of the reverse, in that mental effort actually defeats itself. So what that means is that the more that we try to mental effort or think our way out of a problem, the slower the creative process becomes. Creative thought, creative flow needs space and room. And so if we want to come up with a solution, often what we do is we go for a walk. How many times have you been trying to think your way out of a situation, and then you've gone for a walk, maybe gone for a run, sat down to do some meditation, and within a few minutes, boom, there's the idea. Well, that is mental law number one, the law of relaxation. So essentially, you want to just relax about it.
That's awesome, because I'm sure everybody listening can relate to that. Those times where you have a problem, you have to step away from the problem. You can't just strain your brain and get hyper-focused. So, and again, we see this all the time in primary care when people have an issue and they can't let it go. And then it sucks energy from other places.
It sucks energy. And I think of thought in the visualization of a spiral. And so the more that we effort and think about something, the tighter that spiral becomes. And I think we can all relate to that when we're so wound up. What do we say? We're wound up about something. And that just means that we've thought and we're thinking and we're thinking, and it's too much effort. And what we need to do is just take a breath, relax, create some space, and allow just creative thought to do its thing and to just present you with the opportunity to find that insight, find that answer, find that resource. Maybe it's a lyric in a song. Maybe it's, you know, an inspiration of something. But when we're so wound tight, it's really difficult to get to that place of resourcefulness.
You know, and once we go through these seven principles, if there's time left, we'll begin to talk about how you begin to integrate this with breath work. But the principles in and of themselves are something that people can really put into use today. So that was one.
Second law is called the law of substitution. And this is can be summed up by saying you can't not think a thought away. You must substitute it with another. So if I were to ask you to not think about a purple giraffe with pink spots, you would think about a purple giraffe with pink spots. And the harder you tried not to think about that, the more you would think about that. Well, it's interesting because we know that thoughts are energy and we know that energy can't be destroyed. So it makes sense when you think of it like that, that you can't not think about something. What you want to do is substitute it with something else. Substitute it with another thought. And the easiest way to do that that I found is to get interested in something else, to get curious about something else. And it kind of becomes a pattern interrupt, a switcheroo, if you will. I'm going to flip back to the mental plane and the physical plane being different. On the physical plane, if I had a box of rocks and it got heavy and I wanted to let it go, I would just drop it and it would hit the ground. In the mental plane, if I wanted to drop that box of rocks, I wouldn't be able to just drop it. I would have to substitute it for something else, say a basketball. So when we're thinking about something that's not helpful or not resourceful, rather than trying to just not think about that thing, think of something different. Become interesting in something different. And for me, the easiest way is to just become present to my breath and to just notice my breath. And all I do is just notice, you know, my inhale, my exhale. I'll leave it up to you to be whatever it is you want to notice. But I like to say, notice the noticings and just become interested in your breath. And that immediately, again, creates that space. And we've substituted that thought. Now, well, go ahead.
I was going to say what comes to mind for me, if I'm getting a phone call that I might dread or something, there's a whole series of thoughts and energy that go with that dread. And I can substitute that for, you know, I can say whatever it is I want to say about it to actually change that and welcome it. Oh, this is a real call for an opportunity. I can't wait to hear and really be present to that. I think you're jumping right into the breathing, which is really key. And doing that. And like I said, hopefully we'll come back to that later. But
if you can get to a place of substituting a thought, that's amazing. And that's ideally what you want to be able to do.
Right.
If for whatever reason it feels too difficult in that moment and you're caught, if you're like me and you're prone to a little bit of an anxious brain and you're prone to, I call it mental toggling rather than ruminating thoughts, then I might get interested in my breath. But yes, I can break it down to thinking about a thought that's going to cause me to expand into the moment and move away from something that's going to cause me to contract and pull away.
Wow. Okay. So let's go on to, let's go through the third one and then we're going to take a break.
Yeah. The third one is a really interesting one and it's the law of dual thought, which is that every thought has two parts, knowledge and feeling, and guess which one is more important. The interesting thing here is that it's not actually the information in the knowledge that's important. It's the feeling that powers that thought. And I find this law to be really empowering because I get to choose how I feel about things. You may get a piece of information and it will give you a bodily felt sensation. It'll make you feel a certain way. I'll get that same piece of information and it may make me feel completely different. And so this is really interesting that if we hear a piece of information and it doesn't feel the way we want it to feel, we can change that. Mm. Which no, really,
go right, ahead. So you can work at the feeling level in terms of how you're handling particular information. And some people go right to that. You know, they're feeling a particular way. And it relates to, yeah.
It also is a great way to check your barometer. If every time I'm hearing a certain kind of information, I have a thought about it, which generates a feeling, and that becomes habitual, then maybe that's an opportunity or an invitation to look at why I'm feeling that way. And is there another way that I could feel about that? Information is just information. It's what, how we feel about information that matters.
Right. Well, this is really good. And these are powerful tools, but we're going to take a break. You've been listening to Megan Berg here talking about the seven mental laws that govern all things. And guess what? We have four more to go, but we're going to take a break here on Quantum Medicine. I'm Dr. Kamal Kokai, and stay tuned.
Greetings, listeners. This is Dr. Kamal Kokai. WBAI needs to feel your love. Since the 1960s, you have heard members of your community share their passion and enrich your lives and the lives of those around you. Health, science, the arts, news, it's all here at WBAI. So nurture the station that nurtures you. Become a WBAI buddy. For as little as $10 a month, you can make a difference and continue to feel the energy and passion of all the producers that are trying to give you the best. Go to give2wbai.org. That's give the number 2 WBAI.org. Blessings.
Greetings and welcome back to Quantum Medicine. Dr. Kokai here with our guest Megan Berg, and we are going through the seven mental laws that govern all things, and we're up to four. Take it away, Megan.
All right. Number four is the law of subconscious activity, which can be summed up in the statement that our subconscious mind is always running in the background. The minute it accepts an idea or thought, it goes to work. So how do we know if the subconscious mind has accepted an idea? Well, we know through our felt sensation or the way we feel in our body. And what does that mean that it goes to work? Basically, it goes to work bringing what we think into the physical form. So it uses all of our resources to do that. Number five is
let's just take a minute on that, because I want to better understand, because, you know, we hear subconscious, we hear terms like this. So what exactly are you saying that the subconscious, like in terms of how that registers, what exactly is happening?
So we have our conscious mind, which is kind of where our awareness is and what we consider to be our mind. And then kind of running in the background. It's like a computer program that's always running in the background. And it's that part of our brain that has taken all the information from birth up until now that we didn't really seem to feel was needed in any given moment. And it's been filtered. And so the subconscious mind has all of that information at its disposal. And so what it does is it goes to work. And so really you can think of it as I have an idea and I write that idea on a piece of paper. I've taken that idea into its first form. And then all of the ideas, sometimes it's people, you know, you think of something and then you go and you meet somebody and they have exactly what it is you needed. Well, that's generally the way in which kind of things just start to work in your favor. You know, the subconscious mind might give you a, hey, go here, go for coffee at this place. And you might run into somebody that you haven't seen in forever and you end up having a conversation and, oh, there's the solution you needed, or that's exactly the location you needed, or they know somebody. These connection points.
Right. So it's just part of you, the indwelling consciousness that's always there, that it accesses you.
Exactly.
To help inform you what's going on.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go to the next one.
The next one is the law of practice, which is that practice makes progress. Nobody outruns the need for practice. This isn't something that you can hack. This isn't something that you can just put a little bit of effort in. Where you really start to see these results is consistency and discipline, which is considered to be intelligent practice. So it's just that when we fall off the beam, if we're, you know, fall off, we jump back on. It's the getting back on is where we develop that consistency and that discipline. And so it's just the acknowledging that everything requires practice. You know, we call it a meditation practice, a breathwork practice, a yoga practice. We don't call it a perfect.
So it's the idea that on this plane, in order to accomplish or do anything, especially using this human form or anything in our environment, we have to work at it. You know, we might have a talent or gift, but we have to work at it if we're really going to develop it.
Equal parts inspiration and perspiration. Right?
I love that. Inspiration.
Yeah.
Right.
We can have a great idea if we don't put something, you know, I don't want to say effort, some work into that idea. It's just going to stay an idea.
Right.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. So I think we're up to number six, right?
Number six is the law of growth. And this one is what you think about grows. And many people are familiar with this one. A lot of people have heard kind of attention or energy flows where attention goes is one that we use for this. And it's basically the law of growth is that what you're holding in your mind or in your consciousness is what you're going to get more of. So in the 7-day challenge, I actually used this law to sum up all the other laws. And I like this one to kind of check in and see if how I, the world around me, if how I'm showing up in the world around me is congruent with the way in which I want to show up. And if there's a bit of a discrepancy there or an incongruency, I can go back to each one of these laws and I can see where I might need to put in a little more practice.
So is there any example that comes to mind just to help folks with that, to better appreciate? I mean, I guess it could be speaking in front of a room of people. Or, you know, any task or things that you set up for yourself, you know, you want to begin to actually measure your growth.
Yeah. And most people have an experience that they can relate to. Like, let's say you want a red sports car. I use this example. You want a red sports car. You really desire a red sports car. And then everywhere you look, all you see are red sports cars in the road. And all of a sudden your mind is just tuned to that one thing that you want. Maybe you're, you really want chocolate and you're trying not to eat chocolate. And everywhere you look, everything you see for one day is chocolate and it's just everywhere. It's kind of whatever you're holding in your mind, you're going to get more of that.
I see. And this is where the law of substitution becomes really useful.
Well, this is where they all become useful, because if, you know, what I'm seeing in my outer world isn't matching what I want in my inner world, then you can kind of use the 7 mental laws as a blueprint to be able to go through and figure out where you need to put in a little more practice with each one.
Awesome. And so we're going to come back to that. Let's go to the 7th.
The seventh is the law of forgiveness. And this one seems a little out of place. What does forgiveness have to do with mental thought? Well, forgiveness creates space and it frees up energy. When we have a lack of forgiveness in our life, we tend to hold resentments, which creates what I call a background conversation. Often the mind will forget, but the body and the subconscious remember. So it can be, I like to think of it as forgiveness creates more bandwidth. We forgive and we need to forgive at the heart level. This is really important. You know, we can't just flippantly say that I forgive someone. We have to feel it. And we give the forgiveness that we would hope to receive. It's that give to get. You know, if I can give someone that forgiveness and hand over, just get rid of that resentment, back to creative thought needs room and space. I've now created more space in my system, more room in my system. So sometimes when we're doing all these things and we still feel really kind of full, maybe that's an opportunity and an invitation to look at where we might be able to forgive.
This is such an awesome one because it helps everything else to function better. Meaning that if you get crystallized in your bioenergetic field with a particular thought or experience and you can't release that, right, that then is in your subconscious, is a thought that you ruminate about. It affects everything. It affects your growth.
Law of growth, right? If resentments are what's in the background, then what we're going to keep getting are more opportunities to feel resentful, right?
So, right. So these are things that I feel that everyone should have mastery of. If you want to have a healthy life, if you want to have a fulfilling life, and you may not have gotten to it by understanding these as principles, you know, you might have had a revelation, I need to forgive so-and-so in my life. But what I'm suggesting here is the organizing framework that these seven principles, represent. This is something you want to memorize to the point that it's automatic so that you're always playing this in your background so that it's always there for you. So, Megan, we have another minute and a half or so. I just want you to, how does this integrate with the larger work that you do in terms of the breath work and, you know, just the work that you're doing on that level?
Yeah, well, in the 7-day challenge that I did, every day there's a breath exercise and a thought. So when what I said with the psychology becomes physiology via pulmonology, what you think while you breathe affects your body. So what we've done with this challenge is explain these seven mental laws in a lot more depth, but we've also connected it to the breath and some breathing exercises, as well as a daily thought, which I love, which I notice in my life, the way that I'm thinking and breathing is changing how I feel in my body, you know, so I'm becoming kind of more resourceful and I'm, you know, changing. We think of mental model, and the mental model is the way in which you see the world. And we all have times when that, you know, that if we think of it as a lens through which you look through, and sometimes that lens needs to be polished. Sometimes we need a new prescription and sometimes we need to take the glasses off. And so what I notice is that this is a really good way with the breath and with the seven mental laws to make those changes.
So you've mentioned this this challenge, the 7-day challenge. Why don't you share information on how people can reach you and find out more information about the 7-day challenge and the larger work that you do?
Yes, you can go to our neuroacrobatics website, which is www.neuroacrobatics, neuroacrobatics.com. And right at the bottom of the page there, you'll see 7-day mental law challenge. And so you can sign up for the mental laws there. And you'll also be able to see what we're doing with breath, brain, and body. Sage is the founder and I am co-creating with him this system that he gave to me almost 2 years ago now, and I found to be extremely effective in my life. And so we're just, everything that you need to know is right there on the website and the opportunity to sign up for the 7-day challenge.
Well, Megan,
it's free. It is a free challenge. I haven't mentioned that.
That's good. And as a student of neuroacrobatics, I can only say that this is life-changing work. And, you know, for folks that are trying to free themselves up more and align themselves in a way that they have access to more of who they really are, you know, and share their gifts, this is valuable work. So, Megan, thank you for joining me. And to my listeners, as always, remember, consciousness wants to make itself available through you, wants to express itself through you as you. You are the one that you've been waiting for. So blessings, and we'll be back with more episodes. Take care.
And the previous program was Quantum Medicine, hosted and produced by Dr. Kamau Kakai, heard Tuesdays at 2 p.m. here on